For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, Fightful Faithful. Welcome to another episode of the Fightful NXT Post Show. I am your host, Alex Pulowski. It's no longer Sour Graps, people. It can't be. I'm the guy who hosts Sour Graps. It's in name only. It is the Sour Graps show, but it kind of can't be anymore. NXT is, as we say, it's back, baby. This is great. Aren't we so happy that NXT is back, babies? All of you, my lovely sweet babies. Rafael Garcia says, someone please hose me off after that main event. We all need to be hosed, all of us. Their new guru says NXT is back and Kushida is the best. The Cruiserweight title, women's tag, back-to-back main eventing shows is great stuff. Makes it all more important. Yes, it does. Equally important. Send me your super chats. I will read them on the air, such as this, and it might lead to a nice segue. I like that one. I'll be reading your super chats all night long. Get those in, please. If you would, drop a like, as they say, as the kids say, smash that like button, because it does help. Helps with the old algorithms. I don't know. YouTube's a weird, mystical place with all their algorithms and logarithms and rhythms and rhythm is a dancer. Rhythm Nation. All those things. And it helps. It truly does. I don't know how to describe what we've seen here. NXT is on an incredible upward course. I'm not saying it's perfect, but there's a lot of things that are looking at. Wallace Qualis, you're gonna have to explain this to me. CrossVid, Austin, Time's Up, planned or irony? I'm not sure what that is in reference to. So hit me up and just send me a regular chat and I'll try and figure out. to be acknowledged his five IWGP GHW championships. Oh, really? Well, that's big. That's very big. yes. This is we're gonna blow right through this thing because it's all good. I mean, in theory, as many of you who are are faithful watchers of this particular podcast, you know that I am not the greatest fan of the NXT champion. There are things, as is the case with too many people in the employ of WWE, there are things outside of the ring that make me not the biggest fan of them. I get it. Yes. Yes. Time's up. Because Austin Theory was kind of me too'd. No, he says TikTok and time's up to everybody. So, I mean, he's going to say time's up to whoever the hell he fights. He's going to say that to Finn Balor, who could not be, apparently, a nicer fellow. But Karrion Kross is... it's so hard for me to wrap my brain around what they're trying to do with this guy. Like, he showed up and he was like... the bouncer at a biker bar, like that was his aesthetic when he showed up. But now, like, his dark sorceress wife has transformed him into a Vegas lounge magician last week. And he's back to wearing the gladiator trunks. He looks like he's entering into a blood feud with one half of the Viking Raiders, like gladiators versus Vikings. Who, like, don't they have those old shows was on Spike TV or whatever? Like, would a samurai beat a ninja, or would a Viking destroy a conquistador? Remember those? Did they have those? Was that all in my brain? I just feel like he's part of that. And it just doesn't work for me. And I think that he's not bad in the ring. I just don't think he's this. Which is, you know, just for the second time rocketed straight into the top of the division. It's just so, it doesn't sit right with me. My feelings about the entrance and all this kind of stuff. It's just, I don't know what it is. Listen, guys, I'm a straight shooter. I'm going to tell you how I feel about it. Your mileage may vary. You might like the guy. And if you do, more power to you. It's just not my cup of tea. Next week he's coming out in a toga, says Vallabh. It's possible. I don't know. We'll have to see. But he has his match with Austin Theory. It is funny that Austin and Johnny pulled a face, like they were pretending to be scared. Of, like, they're two cartoon characters. They're Shaggy and Scoob. That's who Johnny Gargano are. Johnny Gargano and Austin Theory. They're Shaggy and Scooby. They're those kinds of characters. And when they pulled a face, like, when after the big entrance, the big spooky entrance of Karrion Kross, it was like they were. Like, oh, gee, oh, Scoob, oh, no, here he comes. Which is, you know, not the best way to be to put over your super spooky, deadly serious champion is to have these guys kind of like poke fun at it. But, you know, Kross is too raw for me, Pong. He's too raw. I think he's got a great future if Vince gets a hold of him. Like he just doesn't belong in this particular NXT that they're creating. It just doesn't fit. There's it's like the proverbial square peg in a round hole. Wallace Wallace says feels like they don't know who Kross nor Scarlett really are as characters. At least not defined to me for him to be pushed so distinctly. I think that's a pretty good description of it. Now he did his they had a whole like promo thing they ran on Raw last night trying to get people to tune in to watch the champion beat the hell out of Austin Theory, which is good. It's as good a reason as any. Personally, I would have been like, hey, two championship matches. One is a 2 out of 3 falls match. Maybe you tune in for that as opposed to watch, you know, this guy get creamed. And here's the deal. Austin Theory got in a good amount of offense, looked good in defeat. He got in more offense against Kross than Keith Lee did when Keith Lee lost the championship to him. I'm going to keep bringing that up, people, because it remains to this day one of the weirdest, most weirdly booked matches. Like, the booking itself, like, I understand Keith Lee's got to drop the title to go up to the main roster. It doesn't make sense to me that you're like, hey, he's the first ever double North American and NXT champion. Let's have him relinquish the North American championship because he doesn't really want that. And then he'll defend the NXT championship against this guy and get treated like an absolute, like he was a toddler wrestling a grown-up. Like, he got in zero offense, and it still to this day always feels weird. Oscar, greetings from Peru. Well, greetings to Peru from Wisconsin. Austin Theory got in a good amount of offense, looked good. Cross sold like crazy for a bunch of stuff, but then he didn't. Then he was like, nope, no more selling for you, sir. I will kick out at one, and then I will just hulk up, hit you with a few Saito suplexes, and then the dumb forearm to the back of the head thing that I don't love. And then after that, he kind of like stares down Johnny. And then he does the straight jacket that he does. It just makes it look like he's just really aggressively spooning. Like, I'm going to be the big spoon. You got to be the little spoon. Just feels a little bit. Oh, just overly aggressive. There's a wonderful photo that they threw out there on social media of him just spooning the crap out of Austin Theory. Oh, geez, he's spooning him so hard. To which Johnny Gargano was like, that's my job. I spoon that precious boy. This is all fine. This is all fine. Wallace Koala says, main roster Scarlet equals White Snake video on car hood. No, sorry. That's Eva Marie's gimmick. Can't have that. Norm Summers says, I have no faith in NXT call-ups. Cross will have a endless feud with a combination of Miz, Corbin, and Ziggler. I don't know, man. I don't know. He's certainly possible. But I do feel like he's just, especially when he's got the husband-wife gimmick thing together, I feel like Vince is going to want to use that for something. I don't know. I think he'll scare the crap out of a guy like Miz, like beat the hell out of him for a while. Maybe they'll get like a mixed tag with Miz and Maryse if Maryse ever wants to get in the ring again. I don't know. It's a weird deal. So Bronson Reed versus Gargano is confirmed during this match for the title next week. More to come on that. Footage of people arriving. It's a big thing, arriving. A lot of arrivals. And Leon Ruff just storms into General Manager William Regal's office. Now, credit to Denise Salcedo. She's the first Fightful's own. Fightful's own, and apparently everybody else's own, because she works for everybody. She's got lots of jobs. But credit to her, she's the first one who I saw bring this up on Twitter, and it's a good point. Regal needs a better office. Like, it's small. He's the general manager. He's got an office in a broom closet. There's no windows. Like, it's all black in there. It's weird. Get the man a corner office with a window, dude. He's your general manager. Like, at least put his fake office in a bigger room so it doesn't look like he's sitting there in the janitor's closet. But Leon Ruff comes in and he's very angry. He wants to compete. But Rugal's like, no, because he took such a beating in the False Count Anywhere match. Now, he did take a beating. But, like, he was about to win. And then he jumped onto the wrong treasure hunter. If he had jumped onto Nicolas Cage, he would have been fine. But he jumped onto AJ Francis instead, and then that was what happened. But he was all set to win that match. I would like this reasoning from Regal if we didn't see Leon Ruff almost win that match before he lost it. But he just flips out and knocks some stuff off the desk. And Regal's like, Leon Ruff, I don't know. I don't care that you are cleared. I will not allow you to wrestle tonight. And that's fine. Go get out of my office. And Leon Ruff's not very happy about that. MSK versus Breezango is our first, is our next match of the night. I was about to say first match because my brain's blocked out everything that Karrion Kross has to do with anything. I'm sorry. But MSK versus Breezango is fun. It's, you know, it's a cool, like, spotty thing with a lot of fun stuff to do. They love to have fun, including a bizarre moment, which is just, you know, it's nothing wrong with it. It's this is the kind of match you do this kind of stuff. The whole spot where the Breezango and MSK are going back and forth doing drop downs and jump overs as they're running the ropes. And then the ref like drops down and then does a leapfrog. And he's just jumping around afterwards like he got all hyped. I have been on the side of giving refs more personality. My thing has always been like, hey, can we have the ref, like one ref will always, you know, disqualify you at the first, if you go past his five count for a split second, he'll disqualify you. Also, don't even try to get involved if you're at ringside because you're getting thrown to the back. But another ref might be kind of lenient, let that stuff slide. I did not necessarily say that I want the ref to be like the guy who like gets involved in matches. So maybe not that personality type, but oh, okay. Let's get some personalities for the referees. Although there is one referee whose personality I do not need to see cranked up to 11, as they say. And then put that on TV because yikes. But I won't talk about that anymore. MSK get the win. I don't think that was ever in doubt. But as I said, excuse me at the time, Popcorn Kernel, as I said, you didn't need to know that. That's kind of disgusting. But I said it anyway. I'm sorry. I'm honest with you guys. I'm never going to be honest. Popcorn Kernel. For those of you who are only listening to the podcast, you'll never know what that was about, which is why you should always tune in live and watch the YouTube video. I completely forgot what I was going to say. I think that Breezango, having been former champs, it means more when you beat them. This is the way it's always going to be for Imperium and Breezango and Oni and Danny when Danny gets back from his shoulder injury. It's always going to mean more when you beat them because they are now former champs. That's a big thing in NXT because there's you can have so many people where it's like, well, these people lose all the time. And Breezango does lose a lot, but at one point they were the champs. So that means more now that MSK has beaten them. I will say I do not understand the psychology of the guy who does the backflip, like next to the guy who's laying there, and then his tag team partner shoves him mid backflip 3 feet to the right so he can land on the guy. Why not just do the move onto the guy? Like, It's fun to watch. Nobody's saying it's not. I'm just saying psychologically, what is the benefit there? Like, what is the benefit to a lot of stuff? I understand, but I mean, more rotations to certain things, I understand, could like the velocity could hurt more if you do a 450 splash as opposed to regular splash. I can be convinced that it would hurt more. This just seemed silly and unnecessary. But okay. MSK is a lot of fun. Somebody was talking about, and I didn't see this, I got to go back and watch it. Remember a few weeks ago where MSK came out and the crowd booed? Like, booed. Like, we don't like MSK. Screw MSK. Well, like, I don't know what that was about. I don't know if we ever found out what that was about, but apparently they never stopped. Like, the Capitol Wrestling Center hates MSK for some reason. So they've been sweetening the crowd noise. Why is the CWC crowd, like, determined to shit all over our boys MSK? I don't know. Well, that's going to be a problem. If we can't get these kind of guys over. I did appreciate that they shook hands with Breezango after the match. That's a good, that's a nice gesture. Baby faces having matches against each other. That's good. It's good. I appreciate the respect. That's a good thing. I always will always pop for that kind of thing. MSK gets to call out Legado de Fantasma. This is the deal that they have now with a lot of stuff. There are so many people who seem to be at equal points on the at equal places on the card that we'll talk about this in a little bit. Karrion Kross is feuding with everybody, right? Especially one guy who I forgot to mention, what I'll talk about in literally a second. But so is MSK. Like, they got Tommy and Timmy, and they got GYV, and they got Legado de Fantasma, and they all want a shot of the titles. But they're just calling out Legado in this promo. So we'll see where that goes. But it does feel like there's a lot of people on equal footing. And we're not really sure where that heads from here. I'm assuming a match with Legado, but why them and not Tommy and Timmy? In storyline, I mean. Now, something I forgot about for some reason. I don't know. After the Karrion Kross match, he's standing there. And Finn Balor teleports into the ring. Like, Kross is standing there, and the camera's right on him, and then he kind of looks over his shoulder, and the camera pans 6 inches, and there's Finn. Like, he's just there. And he's like, I don't wait in line, says Finn. Now, he doesn't have a microphone. If he had a microphone, I'd say, I don't wait in line. But he says, I don't wait in line. So I want my shot. I want my rematch. And Kross is like, I want it too. And then Finn Balor's like, done. And then later, they say, in 2 weeks, it'll be Kross versus Balor. In 2 weeks. I don't know. You might have seen Fightful Wrestle, the Fightful Select, excuse me, which, by the way, subscribe, Fightful Select. You should subscribe. It's pretty great. You get not only my show twice a week, Sour Graps, where I talk about Raw and SmackDown, but also you get amazing scoops. Sean Ross Sapp slinging scoops like he works at the Cold Stone. I'm going to keep using that because I got nothing else. But he scooped that there's going to be an In Your House pay-per-view, a takeover. Takeover In Your House again, June 13th. And then some Barstool podcast had Johnny Gargano on it, and he broke the news. You could say confirmed. You could say confirmed. You could say officially confirmed, whatever you want to say. But we all know Fightful Select broke the news. So, June 13th, hosted by Todd Pettengill. Good to have old Todd back, the Toddster. But 2 weeks from now is the 25th of May. Why are you having a Balor versus Kross one-on-one match on TV on May 25th if the takeover's on June 13th? Wouldn't you just push that back to the takeover? You would, unless there's going to be a big old fucking schmoz that's going to result in like a, I don't know, 6-way match or something like that. Gargano, Dunn, O'Reilly, probably Cole and Balor versus, and Kross, of course, the champion. like a six, like a ladder match, like an, like a ladder match. That's what we're going to get, a fucking six-way ladder match, because I'm assuming we're also going to get sometime in mid-June, the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. So we're going to get a big Money in the Bank, two big Money in the Bank ladder matches, one for men, one for the women on the Money in the Bank papes. We're also going to have probably a ladder match in TakeOver. That's my prediction. Not breaking any news here. I will never be breaking any news here. This is all reckless speculation. But they're definitely not going to a full finish on that May 25th Balor versus Cross match. 100% they're not. It doesn't make any sense to do it then. They might like have a DQ or whatever and then do the rematch again at the TakeOver, which, please don't do that. Please don't do that. That's definitely main roster stuff. We don't need any of that. If I will allow the schmozzy finish if it builds to a giant ladder match with all those great guys in it. Sure. Hannah says, Sean Bennett had to work tonight too, so Leatherface could go cry at another meeting. For those of you who know what that means, Hannah's right. For those of you who don't know what that means, I'm not sure what I am at liberty to discuss on this podcast. Because I'm sure there's ways of skirting the issue and being, you know, what's it called? Pragmatic, magnanimous about, as Hannah calls him, old Leatherface. And somebody else might be able to do that, but I can't. So I'm not allowed to talk about the subject at all because I wouldn't be able to stop myself. They like to have fun, says Norm Summers. Yes. They like to have fun. MSK. Because if you do a backflip onto nothing until your partner shoves you 3 feet to the right, how is that not fun? Like, how is Nash Carter not going, wee, every time he does that? It would be fun. It'd be a lot of fun. Valab, yes. So, get in the chat, people, because then I might respond to you with crazy things like this. Johnny Gargano is storming into Regal's office, and he says, I am angry. I don't want to face Bronson Reed next week. You threw all theory to the wolves. This is my, like, William Regal says, that's a very lovely headband you're wearing, Jonathan. Like, thank you. But still, you're going to have to face Bronson Reed next week. Then he was about to grab Regal's knuckles. By the way, I really, really wanted Candace's brass knuckles she used last week to be Regal's knucks, but they're not. They should have been. Anyway, he grabs for them. Johnny Gargano says, don't even think about it, says Regal. So then he grabs Regal's pencil and snaps it in half over his knee like Bo Jackson at a baseball bat. And so later in the night, I'm just going to bring this out now. Later in the night, we see the aftermath of an attack on Bronson Reed in the locker room. I think it's Gargano and Theory that run out of there, or somebody. I don't know who runs out of there. I was looking away from the thing, and I saw Bronson Reed going like, rah, rah, rah. Well, hold on. So far, rah, rah. And then later, you see Bronson Reed storming around backstage, yelling into a camera about how he talked to General Manager Regal. And next week on NXT, Bronson Reed versus Johnny Gargano for the North American Championship in the confines of a steel cage. And immediately my brain said, oh no, Bronson Reed's going to try a tsunami from the top rope and either absolutely liquefy all of Johnny Gargano's major organs, or he's going to hit no water in the pool and go straight through the mat to the floor.
That's how I would book the end of the match. I think that Bronson Reed should try to jump off the top, and they should gimmick the mat so that he falls through it, like Bam Bam and Taz that one time. Like he just falls straight through the mat to the floor, and they call the match because that's how it ends. Because Johnny Gargano is able to roll out of the way at the last second. That'd be a lot of fun, because you definitely can't do the tsunami onto Johnny, because it would kill him. But I think you could probably gimmick the mat in a way when you put some like pads down underneath it that it wouldn't kill Bronson if he fell through the mat. I think. I hope not. If anything else, they're definitely going to tease that. Like, everyone's saying the same thing. Tsunami from the top of the steel cage. Yeah. So, Pete Dunne standing in the ring. He says,
I'm Pete Dunne, and I'm not afraid. I'm not scared. I don't care. I'm Pete Dunne. I'm the baddest man in NXT, and of course you chose Finn Balor, because you could beat him, but you can't beat me, because I'm Pete Dunne, and I'll break your fingers. And so he's offering an open challenge. He's pissed off that Cross chose Annika, I don't want Bronson to get murdered. I want him to get badly injured for my amusement. I'm saying you got to gimmick the mat so he falls through it, right? Onto a nice, big, fluffy Chris Jericho pillow. You know? That's what I'm saying. But he has Pete Dunne has an open challenge. It's weird to have an open challenge. We don't have a title. I'm just going to say that. Like, I want to fight anybody. I feel like that's fine. It's not really a challenge for what? But Ricardo's Colt says maybe they should ask AEW about bumps from cages. And then whatever AEW says, do the opposite. Yes, agreed. But Leon Ruff, out of nowhere, comes out to start a brawl with Pete Dunne. And so they have a match. Leon Ruff, apparently he's cleared to wrestle. But William Regal wouldn't give him a match, so Leon Ruff gets his own match. And he's a great babyface, guys. He's so good at this. He really, really is. Touch of Madness says, you know, you can see him being the top boss from underground. Agreed. I think it'd be a very. I've always said we need like a shooters club, just guys who just like Duff just to really try and hurt you. And Pete Dunne is definitely top guy in that. Leon Ruff though is a great babyface. He's so good at getting his stuff, getting his stuff in ways that like he did this amazing like escape in the corner where he like just jumped off of all the ropes and then like slid underneath Dunn's legs, and then he didn't because Dunn eventually got a hold of him and you're like, oh man, you were this close to getting away from Pete Dunne. And then Pete Dunne said, no, I'm gonna try and break all your ligaments. This was a fairly quick match. Leon Ruff looks great in defeat, and he puts over Dunn as being an absolute killer. And Leon Ruff is one of those guys that you could all of a sudden, anytime you really, really wanted it, you could send Leon Ruff on like a 4-month odyssey, just trying to get any kind of leverage and move up the card. And he comes across all these gatekeepers and he eventually has to beat them. And eventually he's got his world title shot, you know? I don't know if you put him over in that world title shot, but there's a really great underdog thing that Leon Ruff has that he's small and slight and brilliant in the ring, I think. And there's a lot of really cool stuff you could do with him. Where he's not just a pity case, because he's really good, but he's really small. And you feel like somebody who's the right size could literally snap him in half like a twig. And so you feel for him because he's eminently rootable. But he does a slingshot torpedo, leaps off the top, but Dunn catches him with a forearm. I mean, kinda. He didn't miss as much as as Omos missed on Riddle last night, last night. But he did miss. I don't know whose fault that was this time, but Dunn didn't necessarily catch Ruff flush with that forearm, but it doesn't matter because he actually gets him to just locks him in a submission and then just hits him with elbow strikes until the ref has to call the whole match. Like, no, don't murder him. Don't murder him. Dunn gets to stand tall. Fans get to boo him. Boo him, not blue him. But then he jumps back on Ruff and snaps his fingers. Doesn't snap his fingers. He snaps his fingers. He breaks his fingers. And Ruff sells it great. Like, he's really sells it like he's in pain. Escobar, along with his buddies, backstage doing a little promo, the Cruiserweight title. It's your standard run of the mill. Later tonight, I will win the match that I have. You know what I mean? I'm a big fan of Escobar, and I like his two buddies. I think he's really great. We'll talk more about him in a bit, obviously. So there's a little vignette for Frankie Monet. She's two weeks. She's got her in-ring debut. There were a lot of people not on the show tonight. And I think a lot of that is like, we got a big women's championship match and a 2 out of 3 falls match. That's like the last half hour of the show. But there were a lot of people not on the show this week, like major players in the mid card and upper cards as well. You just had Candace and Indy win the tag team titles. They're not on the show. Like, they were part of a really fun little vignette where like the way is like artistically drawn as like superheroes, like a comic book. So they were that. They have like, you know, they finally won the titles and now they are the way, and they, you know, it's cute. But I would have probably had them on the show. I don't know if they're cleared or whatever, need them to wrestle. I just feel like, you know, they're good. They should be on the show. They just won the titles. Capitalize on that the following week, I think. Also, not on the show, at least physically, Frankie Monet did not appear. Ember and Shotzi did not appear. LA Knight did not appear. Dexter Loomis did not appear. These are people who are who loom fairly large in NXT. I'm not saying everybody has to be on the show. I'm just saying I understand that they are telling stories incrementally. And you can't miss too many weeks in a row the way that you're telling these stories. Otherwise, we lose track of people. 1 week, fine. 2 weeks, you're pushing it. 3 weeks, no. You got to get people back on TV. If they're at that level, you got to get them on TV. So at least we're seeing them. If that's what you're doing with them, pushing them toward a storyline of some kind. Just saying. Mercedes Martinez versus Raquel Gonzalez kicked all kinds of ass, as you would expect. My biggest problem with this match was that too much of it happened in picture-in-picture in the very beginning. I know, it's just the way it works, but I feel like there's some stuff you could cut out to make sure that most of this match happens without a commercial break. I get it. I do. It was tough because the match started out really hot. The action spilled to the outside, and they were like, all right, now we're going to commercial. I'm like, really?
These two women are so great. They're great together too. Like it's somebody that like Martinez has somebody that she can be extra stiff with and not worry about hurting because Raquel is bigger than her. And Raquel is somebody she can throw around and make it look really impressive. Like it's impressive when she gets Io Shirai up and drops her down to the mat with her gigantic power bomb. But when it's Mercedes Martinez, it's extra impressive because that's a big lady. She's very impressive and very strong. And she's tall. She's really tall. It's a very good matchup. I like it a lot. There was some really good stuff in this. Really stiff. And Gonzalez got a chance to sell for some heavy hitting offense. And Martinez like had me convinced a couple of times. Like, ooh, that hurt. Like her fisherman bomb buster was really good. There was a power bomb, like it was like the old alley-oop from the video games where you pick somebody up in a power bomb and then throw them behind you. And it's the first time that's ever made sense to me because she dropped her on the top rope as opposed to just into a face bump, which never really looks as vicious as a back bump to me. Their fight was it was gritty, sloppy, and it humped, says Ricardo Holt. Agreed. It was sloppy. Fights can be sloppy. As Sean Ross Sapp says, not everything has to be perfect. There were a couple of missed spots, but they recovered really nicely from them. And there was a really great couple of really big, stiff knees. And there was a missed kick by Gonzalez, who runs past... missed kick by Martinez, who runs past Gonzalez, who turns around, hits a big boot. And the way Gonzalez like sold all the damage she had been taking up until that big boot, like she staggered onto one leg and then down to a knee and got up and said, okay, now you're mine, bitch. And just picked her up in that big power bomb. So good. This is great. It's a really, really strong way for Raquel to retain her title. And the Nerd Guru says, after a 6 to 8 month run with the title, maybe less, Raquel should lose that title to returning Tegan and then have a Ciampa Gargano feud with Kai. Sure. I do think that Tegan might be a really cool redemption story for her to come back from her injuries and have a run with the title. I think she deserves it. It would be interesting too to see what they do with Kai and Gonzalez as a package when the inevitable turn happens. Sarah Jones makes a good point. Xia Li hasn't been on TV in a very long time. Xia Li is the kind of person who you kind of forget. Hey, wasn't she the lady who did the big kicks? And didn't she have like a friend who's like a 700-year-old dragon lady? And like she got like a brother, cousin, Chinese guy with sunglasses. Looks like he's from the Matrix. Whatever happened to them? Like, it's been too long. You got to bring those people back every now and then. Give me some more vignettes at least to let me remember what you're going to do. But that's the kind of act that's a problem, okay? It's a problem. When you have an act like that, like a Xia Li and a 700-year-old dragon lady, if you don't have people in place for them to run through, then you got to get them into an actual storyline where it's possible they could lose, and that's bad. I think Xia Li had a vignette 2 weeks ago.
But yeah, they were she mentioned last week by Caden Carter and in Casey Catanzaro, but not on the show. Next week probably should be the time they come back and actually do something live in person. I understand not everybody gets on every show, but okay. So we see Swerve Scott, AJ Francis, Ashanti Adonis, Brianna Brandy showing up at the parking lot. They knock the cameraman down, and I really like AJ Francis. Come on, get up. You're fine. You're okay. Just walk it off, kid. And then they get in the ring, and now they are Hit Row. They have a new a new stable headed up by Swerve Scott, and they have successfully turned Swerve Scott from cruiserweight also ran to a mid-card dude who's locked in a feud with a guy he could easily beat, we thought at the time, to hell of an amazing feud ender with that guy we thought he could easily beat, to now genuine bona fide future NXT champion. His floor is future NXT North American champion. His ceiling is future NXT champion. That's what they've done with Swerve Scott in 2 weeks. He's great. And he's got these people with him, Ashanti Adonis, AJ Francis, who's now calling himself Top Dollar, which I know he's been calling himself, he calls himself, he's been, that's been his name for a while. And then Brianna Brandy is B-Fab, which I do like a lot. And they each get a cut promos. It's all in verse. They get to drop a few bars, as the kids say. This is really good. It's really good. It feels like it's something that you could really run with for a while. And I love the idea of B-Fab getting some work in between the ropes. I mean, I'm not sure. I know she's been around since like 2019 at the PC. I don't know what her work rate is like. I don't know what she's capable of doing in the ring. Never seen her actually wrestle, I believe. But if she can go at all, that's a really, really good thing to have for the stable as a charismatic woman wrestler in that stable would be great. Ashanti, we know can wrestle very well. Not sure what Top Dollar can do. I did check out an episode of his little Treasure Hunter show over on the A&E with looking out for the WWE stuff. He seems like an affable dude, a nice guy. So it's been interesting to see how he plays this, you know, this heavy, this heel. It'll be good. But Swerve is a friggin' star. And this stable is going to be something really special, I think. If they can get Swerve into the right feud with the right guy, could be really special. If Bronson were to win the North American Championship from Gargano, I'm not saying he is, or even that he should. If he were to win that title, I think that Swerve, with this entourage, would be a great first feud for Bronson Reed. We see a real estate auction. The auctioneer says it's an 8-bedroom, six bathroom house. Starting bid is $2 million. It's got a jacuzzi. So that's what brings it up to $2 million. And Cameron Grimes shows up and he's like, I'll put it down to $2 million. I'll just keep the paddles down. I'm going to take, I'm going to do it. To the moon. And why are you talking so fast? He says to the auctioneer, which is just hilarious. And obviously the mystery man who's holding his paddle up in front of his face in the back of the auction, obviously that guy is $1 million man, Teddy DiBiase. And he bids up, he's going back and forth
Do I 3 million, 3 million five, 4 million, 4 million five, five.
And they're holding up his dick. He'll bid. And then like, what? Whoever's doing that, stop bidding. I love Cameron Grimes. And eventually he bids $8 million. And then the guy in the back says, 20 million. And Cameron Guy says, who spends $20 million on a house?
The house ain't worth turning. I quit.
It's great. And of course it's Ted DiBiase. So he gets really, really mad at Ted DiBiase for buying this house out from under him. Has it been established how much money Cameron Grimes made off of GameStop stonks? Has it been established? Did we ever get like a ballpark figure? Because just, I mean, is that his first? Is that his first? His first home he's buying? Because if he has already got another house and he's buying this one on top of it, maybe he thinks he's going to flip it for more money. I don't know. it's fun, but he really hates Ted DiBiase, and he should. But a question here from Touch of Madness. Does Ted get a champ to fight for him? Or, and I actually like this idea, does he just take Grimes as his champ? And I really love the idea of the Million Dollar Man not doing this to troll Cameron Grimes. Or maybe he's doing it now too, but what he's really trying to do is teach him a lesson, how to be the Million Dollar Man. And he's able to, like, the sensei who's really rough on his student. Like, maybe that's what he's doing. Right now he's showing Cameron Grimes tough love, but eventually he will train Cameron Grimes how to be the Million Dollar Man. Not just kidding. They're probably just going to have a thing where, like, he actually gets in the ring with Cameron Grimes and punches him once. But his fist is like, he's got boxing gloves, and they're loaded with gold coins. I don't know. It's probably going to be something stupid. I would love for it to be something really great, but it'll be hilarious no matter what happens because it's Cameron Grimes. Cameron Grimes. There's a video package for Zoe Stark and Toni Storm. Zoe Stark calls herself the Wrestling Machine, which is like, isn't that a guy we know? Guy with a broken freaking neck? I'm a big fan of this. I like it a lot. I like it a lot. I am very interested. It looks like they might be teasing this breakup between Dakota and Raquel, because there's a mutual respect backstage thing between Raquel and Mercedes Martinez, but Dakota does not like that Raquel and Mercedes are friends now, and she walks off in a different direction. So, yeah, we'll see about that. Thank you to Quinox1 on Twitter for sending me that and putting my attention to it. I appreciate that. I'm not sure what the end game can really be, other than yes, Ted gets somebody to fight on his behalf. Or does some stupid stunt where he gets over on Cameron Grimes. Or, my personal favorite, he takes in Cameron Grimes as his student. Earlier in the night, Zoe Stark versus Toni Storm next week, 2 weeks? Soon. I really love that they are promoting stuff ahead of time. It shows they have a plan. You know? Like, for example, plans can change. For example, tonight we're supposed to get Alexander Wolfe versus Killian Dane. We didn't. Because Alexander Wolfe had a stomach virus. They're doing it in a way, it feels like it's very storyline. Like, it's not like Alexander Wolf wasn't cleared for some reason. The rest of Imperium, very highly dubious, the reactions to Alexander Wolf being not cleared. Drake Maverick put something on Twitter about how that he thinks Killian Dane told Alexander Wolf to lie about being sick so they wouldn't have to fight because they really are friends and really they still want to cheat, they still want to a turn on old Drake. I'm fine with it if there's a storyline, but I do appreciate that they are trying to book things a couple weeks out in advance because that shows forethought, which is something that is lacking on Monday Night Raw. Carlos Easy says, I'm cool with them splitting as long as the slow burn and ends with Dakota winning the title after a lengthy Raquel reign. You know, I think Dakota probably should get a title reign. I don't know how long it would be, but I think she should get a title reign. She's deserved it. It was really too bad they had her part of the tag team champions, and then like that lasted like 45 minutes. There's an earlier vignette from earlier in the night, or from earlier this afternoon, when Kyle O'Reilly's walking into work, is being interviewed, and then Oney Lorcan walks up and says, like, hey, Kyle, I don't know what you think about how you're going to beat Finn Balor or Karrion Kross or Pete Dunne, because you can't. You can't beat Finn Balor. You can't beat Karrion Kross. You definitely can't beat Pete Dunne. And you know what? And glorious Kyle O'Reilly says under his breath, chicken butt. You know what? Chicken butt. You can't beat me either, says Oney Lorcan. Like he didn't even hear chicken butt. Kyle O'Reilly is, I am convinced of this, he's doing this all ironically. It's so good. This is the guy who, remember how much we loved that he like came down to the ring and he played air guitar on his title belt and we thought that was so cool. He's playing air guitar on his title belt. It wasn't cool. It was dorky as hell and we loved it. This is also dorky as hell. I'm very in. I'm very, very into it. So, also very into Kyle O'Reilly versus Oney Lorcan. These are two guys who just love throwing bows, hitting people with crazy knees, doing stuff. This is a perfect matchup for Kyle O'Reilly in his climb back up the top of the card. But here's the deal. He beats Oney Lorcan by doing his top rope knee drop. And then old Peter Dune runs in. And he and Lorcan take turns beating up Mr. Robert Fish. And there was a super chat about Bobby Fish that I missed. And I'm very sorry. They take turns for bringing up Kyle O'Reilly. And who comes in to save Kyle O'Reilly but Mr. Robert Fish, who we haven't seen since War Games. Since War Games! And he helps Kyle O'Reilly fend off Oney and Peter Dune. And there's this great moment where Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish, tag team partners forever, not only in NXT, but elsewhere as well as Red Dragon, they look at each other and he says, good to have you back, Bobby. And Bobby says, good to be back. And Kyle O'Reilly says, yeah, but I don't know if you heard, I'm kind of doing my own thing now. And Bobby's like, that's cool. I know you're doing your own thing. I got unfinished business with those two, though, because it was in that match, the War Games match, versus Peter Dune and Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch and Pat McAfee, where Bobby Fish hurt himself. So he blames them. So he came in to save Kyle O'Reilly, his old buddy, but also to get revenge on Oney and Peter. So he says, I got unfinished business with those two guys. I'll see you when I see you. And I'm like, this is great. Friendship. That's what we're here for in NXT on this show. We are pro friendship. I love that these guys are able to just coexist, to not be tag partners,
to not be in a faction together, just be another guy. This is a guy who I know has my back if I need him. See how great that is? If I need him. If I don't need him, then we'll do our separate thing. If I do need him, I know he'll be there for me. That's what a friend is, Vince McMahon. That's what a friend is.
So I'm very glad they didn't like turn on each other right away. Like Bobby Fish would have shown up and beat up Kyle O'Reilly in a big swerve or something. Or they would have been gone right back to being tag partners. This is good. This is very good. Stellar Justin Lopez appears to agree. On the main roster, we wouldn't have even have gotten this. Fish would have just returned with no explanation, probably on main event, putting someone over. I mean, is he lying? Bobby Fish on the main roster would definitely be losing matches on main event every week. Yeah, it's I'm a very big fan of this. And I love that they had a great spot for him to make his return. They've just established he's got his own storyline now he's going after. Like, that's good. Kyle O'Reilly gets to continue his upward trajectory, and now he's got a partner if he needs one. It's great. This is how storytelling should work, fellas and ladies. This is how it should work. I appreciate it very much. So now it's our main event time, people. Get in your super chats about this match if you would like. Yeah, this was really good. I saw people who were really weirded out by the fact that it wasn't Raquel versus Mercedes as the main event. And I think that was the main deal was this is 2 out of 3 falls. You gotta have time for it. So if you do this and it goes long for whatever reason, then you're pushing everything else back after it. And then you got to cut time from the women's match. You don't want to do that. So you get the women's match to do whatever they're going to do. And then you say to the guys, we got an overrun. So we're going to let you go long if you need to. But the 2 out of 3 falls match, let's figure out a way to do it. And it turns out the way they booked the falls didn't need that extra time because that was good. First fall, I think, is the longest of the three. Really good stuff. Immediately, Santos's buddies, Wild and Mendoza, try to get involved. They're thwarted by an appearing out of nowhere MSK, and the refs send everybody to the back. Nobody's interfering with this match anymore. Go away. So then it's just mano a mano, one-on-one, Santos Escobar versus Kushida, and it's everything you hope it would be. These guys are great. I'm so happy that Santos has gotten to be this finally. Because if he was very good before he turned and was a bad guy when he was back in the tournament, still wearing the Lucha mask. I think he was doing all right. And after he won the Cruiserweight Championship, okay, fine. Didn't have a lot of stuff for him to do. Like, he was winning some matches here and there, but like now it feels like ever since that build to the big fight with Karrion Kross, it feels like they're treating this guy with a lot of care and respect and allowing him to really look great. Even as happened tonight in defeat, he still looks fucking great. Ricardo Holt asks, did I mention this match humped? You mentioned it already, but it's worth mentioning again. That's how much the match humped. So the first foul is a Phantom of the Phantom Driver. He dodges a big right hand and he nails his knee. So yeah, Kushida does the arm drag and then his cartwheel low drop kick, and Escobar gets up from that and dodges the big baseball punch, hits a big knee, immediate Phantom Driver, first fall.
And Vic Joseph, who it should be noted, is the best in NXT, is the best lead commentator WWE has in their employ currently. He's surpassed Michael Cole. Adnan Virk, we won't even talk about Adnan Virk. He's the best guy they got in their employ. He passed Tom Phillips long ago, but he's the best guy they got in NXT. Because he's not, I don't think he's overmanaged by anybody in the back. Like on the main roster when he was doing stuff, this wasn't him. He's able to like call things on the fly and like react to things as they're happening. He's got a great interplay with both Barrett and Beth Phoenix. I think he's great. But he calls this thing like, we got to go to commercial. Like, oh, no, wait, don't go, because he could see it happening. And he says, don't go to commercial, because he's watching as Kushida does this immediate transition into a rolls to the floor. He rolls up Escobar and turns him into the cross arm breaker, and Escobar has to tap out. It's great. Like first fall, second fall, now what? And it was such a really cool moment when Vic Joseph was like, we're going to go to commercial. Oh no, wait, don't go yet. That was a really cool thing. I have no idea how that actually was called like in the truck, but it was a wonderful moment. They go to commercial for the picture in picture right after the second fall. And it was really great. It was such a cool moment. Nerguru says Vic Joseph talks circles around everybody. He really does. It's very, very, he's very good and so young. Like I would say he should have a main roster job so more people could watch him, but on the main roster, he's Vince-ified so much and it doesn't work. Third fall's great. It gets kind of brutal. Both guys have a lot of really great offense, but the big thing that happens at the end, there's a great moment where he gets in the hoverboard lock. He's going to go to the super phantom driver from the top. And Kushida is able to fight back and do his giant arm drag into his hoverboard lock. And after a long time in that hold, Escobar is finally able to get to the ropes. But Escobar just goes right back to it. And then he does this crazy, like, hammerlock suplex into the corner that just drops Escobar right on the top of his head. Like, it's, whoa, that was brutal. And then he doesn't let go of him, really, and then does, like, a crazy, like, dragons, like a Northern Light suplex, really. But while holding his arm behind his back for the hoverboard lock. And you could look at Escobar's face. He was in so much pain and he could not muster any force to kick out. He was trying, but not like the whole, like Jimmy legs where they're like, you see like their guy's legs are like doing this. You're not actually trying to kick out. You're just wiggling your legs. He was like trying to get some force behind each leg and it wasn't working. One, two, three. And then he pulls down his elbow pad, rolls out to the floor, like looking up at Kushida, like, you nearly killed me. What a great match. What two great competitors. I was almost sure they were going to have like somebody come out and attack Kushida to give us the next program. I'm kind of glad they didn't, because let's just marinate in this greatness. As Touch of Madness says, the best in many categories are in NXT. Amen to that. Yes,
This was a really, really special match. I love that they gave him a full half hour and just said, let's go. I also, here's the thing that I was so sure they were going to do, because you got a guy who's a heel like Escobar in the match. They rely on this crutch too often. I was so glad they didn't do heel sacrifices a fall by attacking the babyface with a chair. So he loses a fall by disqualification, but then gets one right back by beating on the babyface. So now it's 1-1. They do that all the time. Whenever there's a two out of three falls match, that happens so much. I'm so glad they didn't do that. NXT is in a really, really great place. They really are. You know my feelings about the guy at the top of the card. I think he's salvageable if they just figure out what the hell they're doing with him, with his presentation, because it's all over the map. But I think that guy in a big multi-man match with guys like Finn Balor and Kyle O'Reilly and Peter Dune and Adam Cole, and Johnny Gargano, I feel like there's a lot of great stuff there. I think that there's something you could really easily do, because if you're going to put Gargano in a match versus Cross, I don't think Gargano should be the champion anymore, personally, because then you're wasting that North American championship. So I don't know. I think my call would be to have Bronson Reed go over on Johnny next week. And then you could start a thing immediately with him versus Swerve and build that to take over In Your House. And Johnny can get pissed and demand Regal give him a rematch. And like, okay, no, you don't get a rematch. All right, then. I want in this big thing you're doing with Cross and everybody else. I mean, I think that's certainly a way to get him in there. Allow Johnny Gargano to continue this little mini feud with Cross he's got going on. Get him to be a part of this big ladder match where he's going to do a lot of crazy spots, and allow for the North American Championship to be important on that takeover card. That's my two cents. And I don't know who they're building to have this match versus Dakota. Not versus Dakota. I don't think it's going to be Dakota versus Raquel this soon. So now you got somebody, you got to build somebody for Raquel. Is it going to be EO getting a rematch? Maybe. Would I hesitate on rematches at takeovers right now? Yes, because there's so many other people. Women's tag matches, women's tag teams, titles. This is where I really want the Riot Squad to come down to NXT to have a little run. The Riot Squad versus Candice and Indy could be so much fun. And you don't have to put over the Riot Squad and make them champions, although you could. You don't have to, but it would really solidify Candice and Indy as a tag team if they had a really great barn burner of a tag team title match at a takeover versus the Riot Squad. Could be so, so great. I'm so excited, guys. Every Tuesday is great on the NXT post show here at Fightful Select. Fightful Select is where you should totally go and sign up so you can get me yelling about how bad Raw is on 6 days away from WrestleBack Mania Lash. Thank you, everybody, for getting super chats and for hanging out with us. It's been a lot of fun. Next week, Bronson Reed versus Johnny Gargano in the confines of a steel cage. This is going to be so good. NXT, as Luis Pulido says, it's in the best position it's been in since TakeOver 25. Thank you. We'll talk to you next week. Or if you want to stick around and watch me on Fightful Select, yell about Raw. That's going to start here soon, within the next 20 minutes. So have fun with that. and I'll see you later. Thank you, Fightful Faithful. Good night.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.